I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 357. I think we might be back on track now.
With the right numbers. We're not on track on life, okay?
No. This week has been a literal disaster. I mean, Monday started off with a fucking bang because if you're on Patreon, you'll hear this when this fucking episode comes out eventually. This week's Patreon episode, I mean. So we had set Donna's house up so that we could start recording at a distance because our goal this year was to do video because we could record where she could see me, I could see her, and the video saves, and we could share some of that with y'all. Well, my computer is a literal piece of junk, like the podcast computer. We tried for 2 hours to get me to be able to enter the chat with video and sound.
Yeah.
2 fucking hours. So then we said, you know what? Fuck it. Donna came over because we still had 2 episodes to record, Criminal State of Minds for Patreon and Sinister Sightings. She comes over, we record, and the States episode, half of it's not usable.
Well, because it was messing up the computer anyway was messing up, but we were like, it's okay because sometimes it messes up, but it still works and all the things. And
Well, it didn't this time. So that Patreon episode is very late this week, so we apologize. But y'all did get an extra slice.
Yeah.
Because we were very chatty last week at the beginning of the episode, and so we took some of that and made it just special for Patreon. So hopefully y'all liked that, but the episode is coming. Thankfully, Sinister Sightings didn't mess up.
Right. Oh my gosh.
So here we are recording this one.
So hopefully you're hearing this, because that means that it didn't mess up, and it's good.
I just, for everybody in my life, too, this week has just been an emotional dumpster fire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even Colby said the other day at work for him, he was like, it was awful. He was like, everybody was just so on edge and, like, at each other's throats. Like, it was just, everybody's in a bad mood, you know? And I'm like, dang, is it a full moon? I really think it is, though.
Well, we say it's a dumpster fire, but, California is literally on fire.
Oh, my God. And let me just say, then, first of all, my heart fucking breaks for everybody in California. Like, that is so scary. The number of people who have lost their homes, like
their pets.
I have family there, like, that they're okay, but like they've sent pictures or like they've posted pictures from their backyard, and you can see like it like almost looks like the sun's rising, but it's right. Like, no, that's fucking fire.
Yeah.
I cannot even imagine. But the people who have chosen to make this political, of being like DEI hires and that's why it's bad, or to say like this is God punishing California and all of that, and like the people who are like making it that way, shame on you.
Yes. I didn't really know all of that because, okay, I brought it up because I was going to say, remember back when The Hills was on?
Uh-huh.
I did not like Spencer. I did not like Heidi. But my God, am I playing Heidi's song? I am streaming it. I have watched all of their TikToks, and I am, like, rallying behind them.
To get their house?
Yeah. Yes. And I'm just, I love all the Hills people besides Lauren Conrad right now. As of this moment, she hasn't reposted or anything, but, like, so many people are, like, we're, streaming her song. We're doing our bit, But I'm just, like, I love y'all.
But there are people that have, because I've seen one of his videos that were, like, people have commented like that they didn't like him on The Hills, and basically they're getting what they deserve. And it's like, that is so shitty.
Oh,
like,
my God.
To say that a disaster like that, just to make it to that you feel like somebody deserves it and all of that. And then it's just disgusting.
Yeah.
It's not the time.
Spencer was like, you have to pick what you want and we have to go. And she's like, how do you pick through things that are irreplaceable? And so she picked her kids' teddy bears and stuff and went.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that, like, you're hearing that because they're celebrities. Like, all of the people who aren't, that have lost everything and don't have the means to replace it, that's truly heartbreaking.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. But speaking of can't even imagine, though, this is completely off the topic, but at work, we had one of our little questions of the day, and it was like, what's something that you thought was like correct and then like for way too long? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you believe something for way too long. And someone put this, like the statement I'm about to make. And I was like, I'm today years old that I figured that was wrong. Like, I didn't know. But did you know that turning on your light when you're driving, like having your dome light, it's not illegal?
No. Thought it was?
Yes. My mama always told me.
Yeah. They like, just told you that so you wouldn't turn it on. It makes it harder to see, but it's not illegal.
I legit thought it was illegal. Like when I have to do something like, oh shit, I've dropped something and I got to look. I'm like, bing, turn it on. I'm like, hee, 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 turn
no,
it off.
It's not illegal.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was like,
that is great.
Uh-huh. I was like, wait, it's not? It's not illegal?
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so.
Patty got you.
I'm telling you.
You got by Patty.
Because, okay, Birdie. So she's like a cuddler, but not a cuddler. And it's like she was scared to like come and lay beside me. She would lay at the bottom of the bed. But so she comes up and then she lays with me. And then, you know, for like an hour or two, depending on how cold it is. And then she'll like go to the bottom of the bed. But that's her like little thing. And I was getting some treats out and something else fell down. And I was like, oh, I need to organize her shelf. And I was like, oh. So you know how I am when something's on my mind, I have to do it. So the next day I'm like going out to Target after work. Well, then on my way there, I was like, I really want some ice cream. But you know, they have their version of the Halo Top. So it's like a lower calorie protein ice cream that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, if I get that first, I can't go to Home Goods because you never know how long you're going to be in Home Goods, right? So I was like, let me go to Home Goods first. Went to Home Goods, went around, then I went to Target. Walking into Target, every time I think like, I don't want to go here or, oh, I'll go here first, I see people. And it's like, oh, it just is meant to happen this way, I swear. But I'm walking in and I see a girl we went to high school with, KD. And I was like, oh my God, okay. But like she was with her family and stuff. So I didn't want to be like, hey girl, you know, like in the parking lot and it's cold. So like, let's get in.
Yeah, but also that's not you.
Well, it's cold.
No, I know. I'm just kidding.
It was cold.
Well, and it's like, yeah, I hadn't seen her in a while, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I mean, like, she might not even remember me because
everybody remembers you.
It was in 10th grade.
Everybody remembers you.
But I'm in the dollar spot, and KD comes up to me, and she's like, so you, like, you do a podcast, right? And I was like, yeah. And she said, okay, I thought it was you and Carrie. And, well, see, someone remembered your name, but she was like, I thought it was you and Carrie because she works with a lot of other people, like, all over, you know. And two of her coworkers, I believe, are from California. And they were telling her, like, you have to listen to this podcast. These girls are so funny. And they, like, sound like you, you know? And so one day they were just like, we have to know where these people are from. So they looked us up and saw that we were from Mississippi. So they're like, KD, oh, my God, like, they're from Mississippi. And she, like, was like, who, what's their names? They told her, and she's like, I went to high school with them, you know? And they're like, oh my God. So she was like, oh my God, when I tell them this, they're gonna flip.
They saw you? Oh yeah. My God, that's hilarious.
But I'm like, oh my God. And it just like gives me so much like drive and like purpose after that. And it's like, God, people really do listen, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, holy shit. Well, so then I am contemplating how many of those pints to get of the ice cream, and I settled on two, but then I was like, oh, there's some new protein shake. Let me look at that, you know, all the things, and so I'm like deep in thought, and I hear a hey, and I look up, and it's Caitlin from the gym.
Oh my God.
Right? And she was like, I saw you over there, but I didn't want to freak you out. I was like, no, always say hey. And I was like, God, I always look like shit. I really got to start like,
like
doing
getting
something.
Dressed. Yeah.
I was like, oh, good. But yes, I saw her. I was like, oh, add me on Facebook, girl. Like we see each other around. I was like, are you still going to the gym? And she was like, yeah. I was like, I stopped in October, but I'm getting back in there. Which I talked to my brother and he was like, yeah, I'm ready to go back when you are. I was like, okay, give me till next week. He said, whew, Because I was going to say, can we do it next week, though?
Right.
But yeah, like I saw two people and it's like if I would have went to Target first, I wouldn't have. But you know what I mean? It's like it's always something like that. And I'm like, just made my freaking night.
That's
and
awesome.
Anyway, they had a Lazy Susan thing that was kind of like a wedge. And I don't know why I explained it to Tiffany like this, but I was like, it's like an orange. Like you could peel the wedges. I couldn't think of wedge at first. She's like, uh-huh. But, you know, so like I can put all the like Italian spices in, you know, and by that I mean like the Italian seasoning and garlic salt or garlic powder. But like, so I can take them down and use them together, you know, like mm-hmm. I don't have to.
I hate Italian seasoning.
What?
Yes, there is something in it that I just do not like. Colby doesn't like it either. We don't use it. If a recipe calls for Italian seasoning, we do not use it. It's so what? Gross to me. I cannot stand it.
I love it.
I don't know if it's like a.
You think it's like the oregano?
Yes, probably. I hate oregano. Even when I back in high school when I worked at Domino's and it would be a thin crust and it had sprinkled oregano on it, I'd be like, because I hate the smell.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't like not spices. What's the word? Seasonings like that. Like
savory?
No. That you grow. Like
herbs.
Like I don't like sage, I don't like thyme, I don't like oregano.
What is with you?
I don't like basil and I hate cilantro.
God dang.
But you give me some salt, pepper. No, I'm just kidding. But our food is very seasoned. It's just not seasoned with herbs. You know, I don't like herbs.
Ooh, green.
But you give me we use grill seasoning stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like I'm going to put some Tony's on there. I'm going to put some, it's going to have flavor. It's just not going to be herby.
Yeah. Oh God. The things you grow. Oh yeah.
I am on a purge. Like I saw this TikTok and it was like Christmas decorations are down. I want to remodel this whole goddamn house. Like I hate everything. I have given away almost all of my decorations in my house. I just want to revamp everything.
No, I totally feel that. I'm in my dopamine decor phase. And so I'm like, if it makes me happy, I want it like that. You know what I mean? Not like I'm going to buy everything, but it's like, it's okay if this is not anyone else's style. I want it. It makes me happy. Because the Christmas tree, doing it how I did this year, really mm-hmm. did make me happy.
Yeah, see, and I'm in my classic era where I want clean, crisp, minimal, classic, timeless.
Yeah, and I am in my maximalist era.
I feel like I can't breathe in my house. We have too much furniture. We have too much, you know what I mean? Like, I want it all gone. Before we get into the story, we have to talk about Magic Mind. Because, you know, some days just feel impossible to get through. You're juggling a million things, you can't seem to focus, and by the time you're ready to sleep, your brain's still running a marathon. We've all been there.
Absolutely. And that is why we're so excited to share something that could make a huge difference, and that's Magic Mind. It's not a quick fix, not a gimmick. It's all about building your mental wealth.
Okay, mental wealth, like that concept. It's about investing in habits that help you feel focused, resilient, and calm, not just for today, but for the long haul. And Magic Mind is one of those little tools that's going to be a game changer.
For real. So it's a little green shot, and it's packed with 12 active ingredients for focusing, reducing stress, and you're not going to get that crash that you do with coffee. But you can take this at the same time as you're drinking your coffee. You just take, you know, throw it back. It's going to help in the morning. But then also, if you want one for nighttime, they also have a sleep shot. So that's going to be a lifesaver for winding down at night, too.
So your mornings are going to feel productive. You're going to think clearly. And I mean, with the sleep shot, you're not going to be tossing and turning. It's like your brain and your body are finally on the same page.
And again, with the coffee, Magic Mind's not trying to replace the coffee. It works with it. It basically makes that morning cup last longer without the jitters or the crash, because I know I have been there. And everything's backed by science, so you know it's legit.
Also, can we talk about how Magic Mind donates to mental health charities for homeless communities? Every bottle sold contributes to something bigger, So not only are you investing in yourself, but you're also giving back.
And right now, they're offering an exclusive deal. You can get 45% off their 24-hour bundle. That's focus shots for your day and sleep shots for your night by heading to magicmind.com/creepjan.
So if you're ready to feel more focused, less stressed, and finally get some quality sleep, check out Magic Mind. Go to magicmind.com/creepjan, grab the bundle, and see the difference for yourself. That's Magic, M-A-G-I-C, Mind, MIND.com/creepjan, CREEPJAN.
What it tastes like to me is it tastes green and it tastes very perky.
Did you get like a lemony?
Yeah.
Like a lemony, not so sweet, but not like bitter, but like it wasn't like overpoweringly sweet. You know how some stuff, it's like there's so much fruit in it that it's like, woo. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It wasn't like that. It was more of like a lemony, just, I can't explain it.
No, I just was like, that's perky.
So go to magicmind.com/creepjan for 45% off the Magic Bundle.
Okay, picture it. We're going across the pond to South Shields, England, and it's 2005 to 2006. It's a quiet little spot in northeast England, and this house is located at 42 Locked Street. We're talking about a cute young family, Mark, Marianne, no Skipper. And I did that and I was like, I don't think that's how the song goes. But Marianne and Skipper 2?
Marianne and the Skipper 2, I think.
Okay, right? Okay. Anyway, it was a joke. And then I was like, I don't know if that's right. But anyway, it's not really. So it's Mark, Marianne, and her 3-year-old son, Robert, from a previous relationship. Now, they're dating, living together. So it's a serious relationship, but they're not married. Just want to let y'all know because they're young. They're in their 20s. All names and the address have been changed to protect the family's identity. Mark and Marianne, like I said, were in their 20s. They both worked at a residential care home. And Mark worked in the kitchen as the, they say chef, the like chef, cook, whatevs. And Marianne was a care assistant. Now, I'm not sure if that's how they met, but that was their work life right then. And their lives were normal, you know, ordinary, safe. But all of that changed one summer evening when shit started to go very, very strange. It started with chairs moving a little on their own, doors slamming shut without explanation, and the occasional sound of footsteps in an empty room. We've heard all that kind of stuff before. But then it kind of kicked it up a notch when Mark and Marianne were chilling in their living room, and without warning, one of Robert's toys flew and hit them. Much like the rocks flew up and hit me when I was riding my bicycle.
No, I was thinking about, do you remember that podcast, Without Warning, with Sheila Wasaki? And she'd be like, without warning. Warning.
Warning. Oh, gosh. And then another one and another one, just pelting them over and over. Imagine being a bullseye for like Build-A-Bears. I don't know, bullseye Build-A-Bears.
Yeah, it was a thing. Was it?
But it wasn't just, you know, soft toys that were being thrown. It upped its game with furniture. And so this wasn't just some ordinary ghost. This turned out to be a poltergeist. And we are talking about the South Shields poltergeist.
Is it poltergeist or poltergeist?
There's a T in there, but oh, okay. I don't know.
I've never said the T. Well, I mean, I'm probably wrong. Also, this came up the other day at work. What do you call that salad dressing that you have to shake up because it's like oil and vinegar? It's a...
Oh, vinaigrette?
You say it wrong too!
Wait, how is it?
I say vinaigrette, not vinaigrette.
Vinaigrette.
Well, not according to the Google.
Oh, vinaigrette.
Vinaigrette, according to Google. But one of my coworkers said that, and I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, we say vinaigrette.
Well, but normally, this coworker and I are the ones that say things the same, and this time we were not. But y'all tell us which one's right.
Yeah. Huh.
Is it vinaigrette or vinaigrette?
No, you're right. It is vinaigrette. But I do say vinaigrette.
I mean, I say oil, so I can't say shit. Yeah.
But also, poltergeist could be like poltergeist. I think people have said that, like where it's like poltergeist.
Yeah.
But I say poltergeist, but I also say dispatcher. So
yeah,
there's that.
You do put a lot of emphasis on shit.
Also, how about y'all going to call me out in the Facebook group? Being like, Donna, you're talking about England, but you're saying bonjour. Okay, so here's my thought process. When I say it's a small town, it's a provincial life. That, to me, is Beauty and the Beast. It is that bonjour, provincial life montage. Mm-hmm. So I have to say it. So I know that that is not France. But in my head, small town equals Belle going through saying bonjour to everyone. And
she don't want this provincial life.
Exactly.
I knew what you were saying.
That's the one thing she understood. But I will say also, Tiffany and Shalane had my back on the ambition, pouring the cup of ambition with mm-hmm. your guy.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, totally had that. I was like, thank you. Anyway, back to this poltergeist. For a while, it was all fun and games, you know, the poltergeist activity going on. Not really fun and games, but you know, toys were being thrown, chairs were being scooted across the floor. But then it took a darker turn. Mark and Marianne discovered their son's rocking horse hanging from the ceiling by its reins.
What?
Yeah, which felt like an omen. And it reminded me of the movie, I think it's The Godfather, with the horse head in the bed. Yeah,
head in the bed.
Right. I think it's The Godfather. Anyway, but it's like, that's scary. And then another time they found knives that were arranged very ominously in the kitchen. Other knives were thrown across the room and landed in impossible places. I will say probably the only one who would be able to make those impossible places would be Carrie on accident, because I am like, how did that end up there? Like, how did this happen? And it's by a fucking fluke of Mr. Magoo maneuvers.
You're not wrong. Like, not wrong at all.
Well, then there was this one particularly unsettling incident that involved a carving knife, and it flew through the air, bounced off a television perched on a high shelf, and then it, like, clattered to the floor. And what that reminded me of is on TikTok, sometimes I get on those where it's, like, those trick shots, and so it's, like, it bounces off here, goes down mm-hmm. here, rolls down here, and then it goes into something. Which I did hear that people fake those and like it'll cut and stuff. And I was like, that, why?
Really? You're surprised they fake those?
Yes, because like those are cool.
Yeah, that's why they fake them.
I know.
People fake everything. I don't believe shit.
Why?
Like I just assume something's like AI or faking.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible way to live, but here we are.
I'm like, holy shit, how'd they do that? Anyway, but the poltergeist started leaving some messages that weren't just symbolic, like with the horse head and all the things. They were literal messages. Using their son Robert's Magnadoodle.
Oh.
You remember that lovely?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It left creepy little notes like, you're dead. I loved a Magnadoodle. Like, my niece had one. And because I write stuff out on my leg, like, just, like, with my finger. So, like, I would just have that all the time and just be, like, writing things when I was saying them. Oh, I love it so much.
Yeah, I had an issue with feeling like I couldn't erase enough.
Oh, no, that is true. Yeah. God, I love that. Also, before the Magnadoodles, I felt like it was... That used to be Flintstones. I don't know if it was anything else, but it would be Flintstones and it had a like magnetic page and then it had like the little magnet parts. Do you know what I'm talking about? And mm-mm. like you would draw And you could do like a mustache on Fred Flintstone.
Yes. You would get them at like the dollar store and stuff. Yeah.
That's what we could afford back then.
No, I know, but I'm just like, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah. There. Like that was the Magna Doodle first. Because you could write with it and then like you tore, like you didn't tear the paper up, but you lifted it up and put it back down and it would be clean.
Yeah.
Let me know if y'all ever played with those though. Because that, I guess those were my fidget spinner kind of thing before.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't know, but it'd be like, oh, I get to write all this and then whoosh, clean. Do another thing. Right. I hate my life. Shh, clean. Okay.
And then you're happy.
Yeah. So at this point with the, you know, you're dead messages written on the Magna Doodle, they needed reinforcements. And so they had, you know, talked to some friends, some family, but like they didn't like put it all out there, but they were just kind of like hemming and hawing around to something going on. What? Is that not a...
I mean, it is, but I don't, it's not in that context.
Whatever.
Hemming and hawing's like you're avoiding saying something, not going beating around the bush. Oh.
I mean, same thing though. Like,
no,
you're not saying something, so you're going around like you're beating around the bush because you're not saying it.
Hemming and hawing is like, do I want to? I don't know if I want to. Should we? I don't think we should. Should we? I don't know.
I feel like that's what they were doing though, but they did tell some people, but they're like, should we? Should we not? No,
okay.
Okay. God, you know what? We have our own family feud here.
And the survey says you're wrong.
So at this point, enter Michael Halliwell and Darren Ritson. They're two paranormal investigators who specialize actually in poltergeist cases. And, you know, part of the cyclical society, all the things. These guys were like Ghostbusters, but British and, you know, like, I just feel like fancier than Ghostbusters. Like, they're wearing tweed and, like, have elbow patches or something. So, how it all happened was June 19th, 2006. Darren was at his work at the office, and one of his coworkers told him that her friend's daughter had a ghost. And that is so totally something I would do. Be like, oh, so you're, like, you do this on the side? Let me tell you about my friend's daughter's brother who has a ghost.
So my best friend, Carrie.
Absolutely.
Like 1,000% is how that would have gone down.
Yes. So that daughter was Marianne. Darren called and just to talk about what's going on, because, you know, when someone's saying something, they're going to kind of make it either not as bad as it is, or it's going to be worse. It's never like the actual truth, because it's not coming from that person. It's coming from their mother's friend. You know what I mean? So it's like, and then blah, 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 you know, all the things. So he wanted to call and just kind of get a feel for it. And Mark and Marianne talked about how, you know, when it started, they even questioned each other and blamed each other for it, because like, how could this be happening? And did you leave the messages? No, you did, you know. But it's not their freaking son, Robert. He's 3. He's not going to be spelling you're dead with the apostrophe R-E.
I mean, adults don't even do that.
Right. So, you know, like he was like, okay, everything they were talking about and just like all this activity, the investigators went in like as skeptics, but with an open mind. But I think that's what like all good detectives and good investigators do. Like they go in and they're like, could be true, but let's debunk it. And if we can't debunk it, let's document it. So Darren told Marianne to keep an event diary just to see if there's any patterns or anything. And so when they would get together, they'd kind of go over it and see, like, is it more at night? Is it, you know, only rowdy on Friday nights? Whatever.
Not our houses.
Yeah, not ours. Their first meeting, it took about 4 hours, and they started seeing stuff. Like, you know, the first is just them talking, getting the lay of the land, like, you know, seeing exactly how the house is set up, setting up all their equipment. And they were all standing in Robert's bedroom when a yellow plastic nut, like a bolt, but like a nut that way, which was from Robert's toy workbench, flew across the room. which I can picture that workbench. Like, it might not have been the right one, but like, I can picture that from childhood.
Yeah.
What are you laughing at?
You, because a nut and a boulder, not the same thing.
I know. Actually, no, I was thinking of a washer.
All three different.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But, oh, yeah, a bolt is like Frankenstein's head, but a nut is the one that you go tick, 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 tick. It looks like a little tire.
Yes.
Yeah. You like how I differentiate that? Mm-hmm. And then the washer is the flat, like looking like a donut thing, but flat.
You got it, girl. Look at you, fucking fix it Felix over here.
Oh, look. It's because I had that workbench, girl, as a toy. No, I didn't have the workbench, but I did have, it was like a cash register with a, like a conveyor belt, you know, like a.
You had that?
I did. And it had the little beep, 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 beep.
I have, there are three jobs that I have always wanted in my life. Okay, this is all centered around being a fat kid. Truly. I wanted to be a school bus driver because I was jealous that the bus driver and the bus driver's kids got to eat their snacks on the bus. And then I wanted to be a school teacher so that I could drink a canned Coke in class because she was able to have them and nobody else was. And I've always wanted to be a cashier at a grocery store. Always.
Why for that one? Just easy access to food.
Right. No, that one I just like. Yeah. I just like the boop, boop. Me too. Look, self-checkout has been a game changer for me. The other day we were somewhere and I was like, no, I'm doing it. It's like, okay.
But yeah, I had that. Oh my gosh. And I also had like a plate cookware set that had like the water in it that, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, see, I don't want that. I don't want to cook. I want to check things out. Boop.
Yeah. Boop. But oh God, I did love it. And it would like, oh yeah, I love the cash register. My sister had a store. When she would turn the cash register off, I'd be like, acting like I was checking people out, you know, like ding, ding, ding. I loved it.
Yeah. Also, used to lay in bed at night and be like, when I'm adult, because we have this fast food restaurant here called Ward's. And I would lay in bed and I'd be like, when I'm an adult, I'm going to get two sausage biscuits and nobody can stop me.
I could just see little Carrie laying in her
bed. I mean,
bed.
Like 8-year-old me, I'm going to get two sausage biscuits. Why am I this way? Bet your ass I do get two sausage with cheese biscuits now.
I love the teacher thing real quick. She could have a Coke. I don't think I ever thought about that.
Well, you got whatever you wanted to eat as a kid. Your mom did not buy sugar things because she didn't want you to have them in your house.
That's true. My mom, like, when it was W.L. Smith that we went to, you know, there was that Coke machine right before you got to the...
When they had Fresca, and every so often I'd have money for that.
Well, they also had the Barks...
Cream soda.
Cream soda. And, I would get that.
Meanwhile, I don't even think I liked Fresca. It was just so cool. Like, one, I felt cool that I actually had money for the vending machine. And two... That I was like, I'm definitely getting that.
I did love a Fresca. I would get a Fresca when my mom would pick me up at this. It was like across the street from middle school. But like, so I'd walk across a crosswalk. It used to be a movie store and it had a vending machine in it, like a thing. And I'd get a Fresca while we waited on my brother to get out of school.
Everyone's like, I don't care. Continue with the poltergeist. No, I mean, me too. I'm the one that went on the tangent.
What makes you think about your childhood?
Yeah, a workbench. Canned Coke.
Okay, so that yellow plastic nut that we now know is, you know, the tire-looking thing, flew across, bounced off a cabinet door, and then hit Marianne in her back. And before they could really react, another toy was thrown by Phantom Hands. And this toy slid off the top of the drawers and landed in a trash can. No one had moved. They were all there, you know, and then right after that, there was an incident with the rubber ball that basically appeared out of thin air. And that was on Robert's bed, and it was not there before. And then they looked and it's there. And then when they picked it up to inspect it, they found that it was actually hot to the touch. Now, with that, I will say, like, if it was in my hands and then I just like, whoop, threw it on the bed, it would be hot to the touch because I got the hottest hands in the world, okay?
You really do. But you're so cold. That's what I understand. Whereas I have permanent swamp ass, and like right this moment, my hands are cold, but I would probably have a wet chair. You see like a little butt crack.
Oh my God. Okay.
Why do I say things out loud?
Okay. So I want new dining room chairs because mine are like, they're small. And so they're more painful on your legs because they're like the hard, like wood kind, but they're small. Carrie has like bigger chairs. And so I was like, oh, this like whatever kind that I was looking at, it was like a cloth kind, but it was a light color. And I was like, oh, I don't know about like swamp ass and anything else getting like, yeah. I was like, no, I need something I can wipe.
Yeah.
I don't need that. I was like,
it does get hot up in South Mississippi.
So then they're there, not with the swamp ass, but maybe with the hot hands. But a bit later in that same evening, the nightlight that was plugged into the wall by the stairs, like the landing of the stairs that was close to Robert's bedroom, pulled itself out of the socket. They also had like, you know, set up all their stuff. So like when they were downstairs, they captured some footsteps, some knocking on the door and walls when they knew no one was up there. And they got this on camera. Now, Robert really didn't seem too upset by anything going on. If anything, he was just chill with it. He said he spoke to the, quote, lady in his bedroom. And he also mentioned playing with a boy called Sammy. But soon the poltergeist moved from toys to technology, and by that I mean text messages started to be sent. Because again, it's like 2006. Things like, I'm going to get you, and the bitch will die today. These texts would come from Mark's phone, but like Mark's phone would be on the table and not sending these texts. But my thing is, I was thinking 2006, I was in college at that point, and I know in college, maybe it was freshman year only, I did not have unlimited texts.
No.
And I'm like, if a ghost was stealing my text messages and like, put like, I have a limit on this. You cannot be stealing this or send it in fucking nights and weekends.
I remember when you first got texting, I didn't have it yet, and you and my sister Casey had it. And I remember, in 1 month, you text more than anybody we knew, and you would text 4,000 text messages.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it was like huge. Everybody was like, she what? And I like know. Now we send that in like a day.
I know. Oh, shit. I did not have unlimited text at that time, though. That's how we knew how much I had text.
Right.
Because it was like, what happened was. Then there was this one time that the phone rang and they had like a landline, but it was really just like an inbound call kind of like they had their cell phones that they really used, but it was just more of a in case of emergency, call this number kind of thing. Well, the phone rang and when Marianne answered it, it was like this robotic voice and it was just saying, hi, 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 hi. And apparently in 2006, you could text a landline, which it would convert the text to a like robotic voice
what?
Saying something. That's what this said. And I was like, I never did that.
No, I've never heard of that.
But also, I thought it was illegal to have your dome light on when you were driving. So, you know, but Darren informed them, like, hey, these text messages and like the calls, it's just the poltergeist way of creating fear, generating fear and emotions, because that's when they have more power. They want to feed off of it. But like they're empty threats. Don't worry when it says like the bitch is going to die. It's not going to kill you. Just water off a duck's back.
Okay.
And after there was some more shit going on, you know, they were talking about going to stay at Marianne's mom's house. Because it's like, this is kind of, you know, really feeling threatening now. Well, while on the phone with Mike, because Marianne was like, I got to call Mike and let him know we're going to go stay at my mom's house. Because like, if they came to do more investigating and stuff. They were going to be gone for a bit. So she's telling him everything, and she received a text message, and it said, "Please don't go. I will come with you, bitch."
What?
And so she's like, "Mike, what the fuck? Like, I'm literally telling you this, and it's like hearing me and texting me, you know?" And then she had said, like, she, like, "How am I going to sleep tonight with this?"
Yeah.
Then another text message came through and said, "I can get you when you're awake, and I'll come for you when you're asleep, bitch."
Motherfucker wasn't playing.
Right. I'm like, why you have to put bitch on it if you're going to, like.
And also, don't fuck with my sleep.
Right? Who are you, Freddy Krueger? Come on. Anyway, it wasn't all text and toys, because it went into really honing on Mark and attacking Mark. It left scratch marks. It had bite marks. One time Mark was laying in bed with Marianne, and it was like 11 p.m. on July 13th, 2006. And there was this large bed frame that was leaning against the wall. It fell on him that, like, when he tried to, like, shield himself, it, like, bruised his arm. Like, it legit was heavy and, like, coming down. It wasn't just like a, and a, oop. It was with force, with intention. And then a few days later, on Tuesday, July 18th, Robert the Kid had this wooden train, and it was thrown and hit Mark in the head. Then he got another nut to the face, the yellow plastic nut.
Donna's weekend plans.
And then there was this toy car that was like battery operated, hit him square in the back. And then sometimes it would hit him in the foot too. And you know, like all I can picture is like him trying to walk and that fucking car just being like, vroom, hitting him. Oh, send me into like a fucking rage with that. And so a month later in August, Mark felt this like burning sensation on his torso. So he got out of bed because he's like, what the fuck is going on? He removed his shirt and he saw that it looked like a rash was on him. And then it looked like out of nowhere, three long scratches came in between, you know, like when you can just see when you do have like a bite and you scratch it. And so it's like, oh, that's bad. But then you like do it one hard time and like you can just see where you have like raked your skin.
Yeah.
That was what happened to him. And it was like across his chest, his side, and on his stomach. And so this was like the first time that it really like got Mark, and it didn't stop. Like, it was constantly attacking him and drawing blood. One time, Mark and Mike were both on the stairs, and they did see something that they believed would be the entity. And they both described it as 2 meters high and just as black as midnight. They said it was a three-dimensional silhouette. But, of course, Mike, the investigator, was, like, too stunned because they didn't think they were going to capture any, like, actual entity, because poltergeist is more energy, you know? And so when they saw this, he was so stunned, like he pressed record after it left. Like it was just like a brief thing. And he's like, biggest regret of my life, like just not having that reflex to hit record. Over the investigation, it was like 7 months that they did stuff at the house. They documented over 200 separate incidents. And eventually the activity got so bad that they moved out temporarily, but the poltergeist followed them. So it was more like, it's not attached to the house. It's not haunting the house. It's attached to them, which makes sense for it to be a poltergeist because, again, it's energy. It's feeding off of that. So,
yeah, I didn't know they could follow.
Well, if you think about it, though, like it's usually attached to someone or like because of someone. So like someone might have, I'm thinking about like Carrie, like, you know, the movie Carrie, but which I know, but it was her, like, what'd she have, like psychokinesis? And because of that, with the poltergeist, like the energy and all of that, it would happen anywhere. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's it. Like it's feeding off of someone's energy. So wherever that someone goes, they're causing it, basically. Now, both Mark and Marianne were struggling mental health-wise because they couldn't sleep. They were scared for their son. They were scared for Mark. And Marianne was getting these threats, but Mark was getting attacked. There was even a point where their son, Robert, he started, you know, just being very anxious and very withdrawn, where he wasn't affected at first. He was. And I think, honestly, that has a lot to do with them, the parents, like feeling worn down. And, you know, like he could just feel the shift in the home that way. But after months, actually, it was almost a full year of activity in the house, it started to slow down. And they say that poltergeist activity doesn't last that long. Like it typically will last for like a year at most, 2 years.
And that's a long fucking time.
It is a long time. But you know how people are like, my house has been haunted for 10 years. Like, it's not like that. And again, like the year part is, this was a special case. This and like the Enfield poltergeist and stuff like that. But no one knows for sure what happened. But it just started to kind of fade off. But if you again believe that it's preying on someone's emotions, when that person starts to feel better or get help or whatever, it doesn't have that energy anymore. And if, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. It's like, no wonder it's kind of going away. And then once that goes away, your anxiety kind of dies down. And so even more, it becomes more back to normal, I guess. I don't know. I've never had a poltergeist.
Thank God.
Now, luckily, Mark and Marianne made it through. You know, like they had some rough times during that year, but they did make it through and they did get married. But since the activity kind of waned down, they lost touch with Mike and Darren. But Mike and Darren went on to like write books and stuff. But they did keep Mark and Marianne and Robert's identity completely a secret, which kind of goes to show for me that they didn't want anything, like mm-hmm. the people, you know, like they just wanted help. Now, Mike and Darren have wrote books and like go and talk about it and all of that. And even now, the South Shields poltergeist remains the most documented cases of paranormal activity. But I hadn't really heard of that. And I think because the Enfield poltergeist, because it's over in England. And so that kind of like when you look up something, that comes up. And then like I even Googled because I was like, is South Shields poltergeist and Enfield poltergeist the same thing? And it was like, no, they're commonly linked together, but they are two separate blah, blah, blah.
Really?
And I was like, okay, let me do this.
Also, I just cannot get the Gilmore Girls. If you leave, I will follow anywhere. That you tell me to.
Oh, God. I do love that song. That's one of those, like, you hear that song, you think of the show, but you think of that beginning, like that opening mm-hmm. scene. Just like Friends. If you hear that song, you think of their opening credits.
Yeah. Well, I think it does say something that the people's identity was kept secret. But, I mean, that could have been, like, in a contract, you know, that they were like, we want the money, but we don't want our shit out.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
I don't know. But, man, why if they made these names up, they had Mark and Marianne, why did they not do an M, like Michael, for yeah. their son?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Okay, so the story I'm doing this week, I fell asleep watching Diabolical on ID.
Ooh, I haven't heard of that one.
They say, like, every murderer's bad, but some are diabolical. Like, that's ooh. Their intro. And I was like, screw. Because this happens in Pritchard, Alabama.
What? I know Pritchard.
Yeah, Pritchard is like right outside of Mobile, right around, which Donna was born in Mobile. It's like
right by Chickasaw where my sister lives.
Yeah. And actually, when we went to see Colby's family right at Christmas in Mobile, we were driving home. We passed Pritchard And he was like, "Ooh, Pritchard, I worked there. That is a dangerous place."
Yeah.
And then one of our techs at work, she grew up in Mobile too. And I said something about the story. I don't even know. I never talk about it, but I, for some reason, did. And I said it was in Pritchard. And she was like, "Ooh, Pritchard was bad when I lived there. Like, mm-hmm. We didn't even drive through Pritchard," because she's young. I mean, she's like 24 now. So she would have been like in high school.
Yeah. I don't know if this is going to be the same story, but there was a First 48 it might not have been Pritchard, but I'm pretty sure it was Pritchard. I don't know. But my sister loves all of this, and she saw them like filming it.
Dang. No, I don't know that it was on that. This has been on quite a few shows. There's a bunch of podcasts on it. The one that I did listen to is called Murder in the Black. And when I listened to it, I was like, oh, they saw the same show I saw, you know. But like I said, there were quite a few shows on this. So picture it. We're talking October 12th, 2011. We're in Pritchard, Alabama, when police get a call. The caller on the phone is Eugenia Campbell. She and her sister had just gotten to her house. And she tells police, like, something's up because her husband had just gotten home from working offshore and, like, his car was there, but his trunk was up and the front door was open. Like, the key was still on the door. Like, something just didn't feel right. They didn't feel safe. And so they called police. Police are like, "Stay in your car. We're on our way." When the police get there, she, again, tells them everything that her husband Romano had just gotten home from, like, he does like 2 week hitches on and off, and which is very common here in the South, that people work offshore on oil rigs and they do various different lengths of stay. Like, they may do like 2 weeks. That's probably the most common, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. They'll do like 28 days on, 28 days off, or, you know, 3 weeks on, 1 week off. Like, there's so many different ones, but the most common is 2 and 2. And it seems like that's what Romano did. When police first go up to the door, they call his name and they don't hear anything. So they start looking around and they find Romano's body. He had been shot 13 times.
God bless.
Now, we'll say a couple of places I saw 16, but it seems like consensus is mostly 13. That's minor, but just, you know.
A lot of fucking times.
Yes. So the police bring Eugenia back to the station to just get some information because, you know, what the fuck? And she does tell police that she doesn't know what happened, but she does know that about a week ago that they had a burglary. And she tells police that Romano's gun was stolen. But they go back and look in the official report, and that wasn't there, but she did tell them that. Now, it was a little weird because Romano, like I said, had literally, like, the night before gotten back from his hitch, and Eugenia wasn't at the house to greet him. She had actually spent the night with family with the kids. So Eugenia had a kid before she and Romano got married, and then she and Romano had 3 biological kids together. But she wasn't staying at the house for, like, most of the time he was gone. And she told police, yes, she was scared. And so, you know, when he got in late that night. And so she just stayed at family's house. And then, you know, that afternoon was when, after he, like, got home, slept a little while, whatever, that's when she came home to, like, catch up with him. And that's when she found the house like that. So they thought that was a little weird. But, I mean, she had an alibi for being at her family's house and all of that. So, okay. So let's talk a little bit about Romano and Eugenia's relationship. So like I said, Pritchard is not, I mean, it's a dangerous area. And Romano is the oldest of like 7 kids. His mom had him when she was just a teenager and she raised him and he did everything he could to avoid being another statistic and really tried to like make something of himself. Now, he and Eugenia were in a relationship in high school, like went to prom together, all the things. And Romano's mom really liked her. And then one day she kind of realized like, wait, Romano, where the fuck is your money? And he was like, well, I had to give it because like he had a little job, you know, And he was like, well, I had to give it to Eugenia. And she's like, well, what the fuck you mean you had to give it to you? Well, she didn't say fuck because they were very religious. But she was like, what you mean you gave it to Eugenia? And he's like, well, she's pregnant and she needs it for an abortion. Now, mom was like, we don't do abortions in this family. Like, that's we don't believe in them. So, like, let's go talk to Eugenia's mom. Which, I'm going to be honest, I thought it's pretty weird that they didn't talk to Eugenia, but they talked to her mom. But who knows how many points of this story that we're just getting like a Cliff Notes version of. So they go talk to Eugenia's mom, and she's like, Eugenia's not pregnant.
Oh, my God. Well, see, I don't know if, like, she just doesn't know, or Eugenia really wasn't pregnant and just using the money.
Yeah, Eugenia really wasn't pregnant. Her mom said, she's faking that. She's literally wearing a pillow under her shirt.
Wait, what?
Yeah, she is faking being pregnant. She's like, in fact, Eugenia's mom's like, no, Eugenia is a compulsive liar.
What? And now this was in high school.
Yes. So stay tuned. So Romano is like, I'm sure, head swooning about this. Like, I can't believe this, that she's lying or whatever. And so he and his mom kind of talked it out, and he decided to break up with Eugenia. After he finishes college, he joins the military. He does basic training in Fort Knox, Kentucky. I think he goes to, like, Germany, all the places. And when he's done with the military, he decides to come back to Pritchard. When he gets back, what's he do? Runs into Eugenia. And, you know, it's been some years since they broke up. She'd had a kid with somebody else who just kind of dumped her. And she is honest with Romano and is like, you know what? Look, I'm not the girl I was back in high school. I was a kid. I was stupid. I'm sorry. Like, I really, you know, love you, like you, whatever. Like, I want this to work out. And so they got married and didn't tell anyone.
What?
Romano's mom found out because she saw their wedding announcement in the newspaper.
Now, they put it in the newspaper?
And didn't tell anybody. And, you know, over the years, I mean, they're married. And he ends up, like, finishing military stuff out, retires from the military. And, you know, they have kids. He works hard. He works offshore. And he does everything he can to take care of their family. I mean, they had their hard times. He did 2 tours in Iraq. I mean, you got to think, this is, like, 2011. I mean, think about where we were in America, like, with our military and all. He was in the military for, like, 7 more years after they got married. Now, on one show I saw on this, I'm not going to tell you the name yet. You could probably guess the name.
Snap.
It said that while he was in the military, that Eugenia got pregnant by another man and ended up putting the baby up for adoption. So, don't know. But even though he knew about the infidelity, you know, the military is not a big on divorce.
Right.
And yeah. So, you know, they were like, you can do a legal separation. But they, you know, Romano was in it. You know, he was not going to give up. So after his final tour in Iraq, when it came time to either reenlist or not, he was like, no, it's time for me to go home and be with my family.
Keep an eye on her.
For real. And, you know, after Romano had gotten out of the military and was working on the oil rigs, he was making more money, and things just really seemed to be going better for the couple. They seemed to be in such a better place. I mean, they were having still spurts of separation, but, I mean, you're on an oil rig where you can call each other, not on a base in Iraq. You know, it's very different. But now, flash forward to October of 2011, and he's been murdered. On Snapped, they talked about, like, this is a man who survived an IED explosion and then comes home and gets murdered. And that right there, that's some shit that pisses me right the fuck off.
Yes, it's like people who survive cancer and then get killed and stuff too.
But someone who literally laid their life on the line for you, to protect you, to serve you, someone in the military, someone in, like, police, whatever, a firefighter, what, any type of, like, first responder type shit, who puts their life on the line for you and goes to fucking war. I mean, literal war. And survives the unthinkable and then comes home and some bullshit like this.
Right.
That is like a different level that just enrages me.
Yeah.
Now, at first, police were thinking like this was like a burglary gone wrong because, I mean, like literally what the fuck else is it, you know? But the thing is that there was nothing missing. Like the TV was still there. Like all the expensive things that people would steal in a robbery were still there.
Well, and also she had kind of set it up where it could have been because, oh, we had a burglary. Yeah. They stole the gun, blah, blah, blah. Hence the diabolical part of this.
But also, again, like, you know, with Pritchard, it's a lower income area. There is a lot of burglary and crime. And so it's not out of the realm of possibility. But they feel like if they could figure out who did the burglary, like the week before or two, however long ago it was, that maybe then they could figure out who murdered him. But they also kind of couldn't figure out where the person came into the house either, because, again, there was no like broken glass or anything like that. So like, how did they get in?
But also, like, when I think about his trunk being open, it was like he was coming in, bringing the stuff.
But it was past that.
Oh.
And also, the weird thing is that he was shot so many times, but there were only like three shell casings that they found. The rest was picked up. And, you know, a burglary, they're not doing all that, you know?
Yeah, it's a smash and grab.
Yeah, and it seemed like the places that the shell casings were more like under the couch type thing where it like rolled and they just didn't see it. And we're like, I don't know how many times I pulled the trigger, but these are how many I found. Okay, gotta go, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like still fast, but not, like you said, hey, we're going to break into this house and we're going to steal the things and I'm going to take as much as I can. When police go to tell Romano's mom that he had been murdered, Patricia's her name, they got gobsmacked by what they found. Her house had burned down the day Romano was murdered.
What?
Yes. And to me, like, the thing that is so heartbreaking about this, like, I'm just gonna jump the gun here and just say, spoiler alert, neither one of them had either anything to do with the other. It was just totally a purely shitty thing that happened.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like an electrical fire or something like that. But I mean, police were really at first like, okay, what's this connection? Like what, like literally what are the odds? But it truly did happen. And when I think about this, my heart breaks for his mom because not only has he now been murdered, but she has lost every picture of him, every baby picture, every blanket, every scrap of anything that belonged to him is now gone. And she can't sit there in her feels and look through those things and process it because it's all fucking gone.
Yeah.
And that to me, when I heard that of this story, I was just like, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like on, I think it was on the diabolical, it was like Patricia called all of her kids and was like, the house is on fire. Like she had been out shopping with her grandkids and they came home to go to the bathroom, freshen up, whatever. And when they got there, they like opened the door and the house was on fire. And so she like called all of her kids to like, hey, you need to come over. And it was like Romano wasn't there, but they didn't know he wasn't there because he had been murdered.
Oh my gosh.
So now back to the investigation. Police have talked to Eugenia. They've talked to her sister. They've talked to family members, coworkers, bosses, everything, trying to figure out who the fuck would want to kill Romano. And no one had anything bad to say about him. Like, everybody was like, I don't know who the fuck would want to do this. They interviewed neighbors because they were like, okay, did anybody see something outside of the, you know, the normal everyday stuff? And the neighbors had seen like this one car that one neighbor actually wrote down the license plate of. So the police look into the license plate and it's actually like essentially a taxi. And so they find out that the person who had taken the taxi there was actually somebody Eugenia was hooking up with.
What?
Yeah. But it was not like it was just like this kind of short-term fling. They interviewed the guy and he had nothing to do with it. And so that's when they realize, like, no, she's been having a lot of affairs while Romano is off at work.
Oh, my God.
I mean, like, literally on Snapped, they say she had so many affairs with different guys. Like, it was a lot.
Why? How?
They say that she basically, while he was gone and while he was there, it was like two different lives that she lived. But when they ask her about it, she doesn't deny having cheated on him. But she's like, yeah, I may have had all these affairs, but I didn't do this. And she has an alibi because she had been with her sister. And I think they had even like been in Biloxi, Mississippi, like gambling and stuff. So she had an alibi. And she had even called him like 30 minutes before he got home. So then you got ping pong pong of her cell phone pinging around things. They're like, okay, well, we know for a fact she's not the shooter, but did she have something to do with it? But there was like literally nothing. And so the case really starts to go cold. Then right after like all this kind of starts cooling down, Eugenia moves to Biloxi, Mississippi. Like she just like up and moves after this happened. And so it's like,
Wait,
why are you, where are you going?
Yeah. Which I mean, though I do get not being able to stay in the house that your husband was murdered.
For sure. But like, also why Biloxi?
Right.
Also, that's where we go gamble.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a good Whataburger because we ain't got one here.
Yes, they do. Well, that's more in Gulfport, but yes.
You get the point. So 2 years go by and nothing. Until one day, they get a phone call from a guy in Ocean Springs.
Oh my God, we literally just went there.
So this guy in Ocean Springs says that he has a friend named Frank Williams. And Frank Williams told this guy that he had killed Romano.
I don't know why, but Frank Williams sounds like a fake name for Hank Williams.
I thought you were going along the Frank Bennett from Fried Green Tomatoes.
Yeah, but like, it makes no sense. It's a real name, but I'm like, sounds suspect.
Well, it's a real name. And so police are like, what the fuck? Who's Frank Williams and what's he got to do with this? Well, turns out he had been dating Eugenia. And that's who she moved to Biloxi for.
Uh-huh.
They had had a kid together now at this point. And I guess they had had a little bit of a fight and he moved in with some friends and he started spilling the beans. So the police get a warrant and arrest him. As they're interviewing him, he is not giving anything up. And they're like, look, you're going to jail either way. Like, you either tell us or you don't, but like we got you kind of thing. And they're like, so you're going to go to jail, so you might as well not go down by yourself. That's when he was like, you right.
Right. Say no more. Or what is it? Say less.
Right. And so he says, look, this all started August 2011. He met Eugenia, and from the diabolical, it seems like Frank had maybe some sort of disability, like some sort of intellectual disability, where he was very much a people pleaser and would kind of do everything you asked. Like, he couldn't, I don't think for himself in a way. So like, if you said it, it had to be true and he needed to help you. So Eugenia had started this relationship with him, but she was very upfront with him and even his mother about the fact that she was married. But Eugenia said that Romano was abusive. And so that's how she was like, yes, I'm trying to get out of this relationship with him, but he's abusive, yada, yada, yada. And Frank fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. And so when Romano was out to work, she was basically living a double life with Frank Williams down in Biloxi.
How do you do this with kids?
I don't know, because she took her kids with her. From everything I gather, like from Diabolical and all, that it seems like she would take them with her to Biloxi.
I'll tell you what, her kids weren't me, because I would have been like, Daddy, Mama and her friend, blah, 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 blah.
Right? And they talked about this on the Murder in the Black podcast. The person that called police was Eugenia's brother-in-law. Now, I don't know if it's from the sister that she had been staying with, but it was her brother-in-law, and that he was like, yeah, actually, I've been hooking up with her. And she had, and she had actually asked me to kill Romano. And I was like, nah, bitch. But like, I didn't think she was real. But then I guess she was real because now he's dead. So I don't know. But basically, she started putting it in Frank Williams' head of, like, we got to kill him. He's, you know, he's this, he's that. We're going to collect Social Security benefits for the kids. If he's dead, there's like a $200,000 life insurance policy, all the things. And she said that she would give him half of the life insurance. And at first, he was like, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. But then that's when she really started pushing that there was some domestic violence that there wasn't, and really started pulling on those heartstrings with him. And he eventually gave in. So he says the break-in was staged, and that, of course, they took the 9mm gun, and the shell casings that they did find at the scene were from a 9mm. But when Romano was supposed to come back, Eugenia was going to take her kids to her sister's house, and then she went and picked Frank up and took Frank over to her and Romano's house, let him in the house, gave him the gun, and he waited. So that's why there was no breaking and entering, because she turned the fucking key and let him in.
Wow.
And once she left him there, she went back to her sister's house because now she's got an alibi. So he said, like, basically, Romano came in. He was, like, standing by the couch doing all the things. And he came out of the hallway and started shooting him. And the police are like, how many times did you shoot him? He says, 2 times till the gun stopped. So, I mean, like, I don't think he really realized how many he just shot until the gun stopped. So, but he said that he had a gym bag around the gun so it would catch the shell casings, but it didn't catch a couple of them. But Eugenia did pick him up from a gas station. Like, after he did it, he left and went and walked, and then she had to pick him up. And then, you know, we know the rest. So police charge him with first degree murder. And then they charge Eugenia as well. Now, there were, like, multiple people that say that she had approached them trying to hire them or get them to hire someone as a hitman. And so they bring her in, and she denies everything. And they're like, we know you did this, you know. But she held fast for about a year. And then they brought her back in, and eventually she confessed, and she and Frank pled guilty to murdering Romano, and they were both sentenced to life in prison, like, with the possibility of parole at, like, 25 years. And so she's going to be eligible for parole in 2029, and she's only going to be 48 years old.
Oh, shit. She still has her life.
Yeah, because they were all, like, I think Romano was, like, 32, and she was, like, 29 or something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, I don't know who got custody of the kids, because y'all know how I like those case law, find law things. On that, there was, like, this whole appeal on that Romano's mom. Okay, so, like, basically how it goes is because, like, with the life insurance, because, like, a $200,000 life insurance policy. So because Eugenia can't get it, then it goes to the kids. And I don't know if it went to all four of them or if it was just going to 3 biologicals. I don't know. That wasn't very clear in this appeals. But basically, Romano's mom was saying those kids shouldn't get it. She should get it, because she was saying that she had so many affairs, we don't even know that those kids are really his. And the Court of Appeals was like, no, they were married, and it's, like, implied
parental, right?
No, it's like that they're, like, the, I forget the word, but basically that's his biological kids, and that, like, there's no cause to, because the mom was like, well, then we need to get DNA tests and prove. And they're like, no, you can't force them to do DNA tests, because it's like,
well, and no matter what, he loved them as his kid,
right?
Like, he wouldn't want that.
Implied paternity, I think, is what it is. This case law, fine law thing, it doesn't name the kids. Like, it uses their initials because they're minors. And by the sound of this, because y'all know sometimes these things are like Alabama Uniform Parentage Act 2617101, you know, like, it's very confusing. But from what I understand, it's standing that the kids are going to get the money. Yeah. And so it talks about how, like, they were married, legally married to each other. They had children, was born. Romano is the father on each of the birth certificates. And so basically, I don't think she has a leg to stand on. But I'm like, okay, so who has custody of these kids then? Because could you imagine, like, you live with your grandma and she has custody of you, and then she's like fighting you in court via your guardian ad litem that's like,
yeah,
you shouldn't get this fucking money.
Like, I feel like the Cinderella of it all. I
don't see, I never saw who has custody of them.
Well, maybe her mom.
Maybe. On that diabolical though, when Romano and his mom went back to Eugenia's mom after they got married, and her mom was like, all I got to say is you need to run. You need to stay away from her.
Fuck.
You know, maybe because y'all are like a great Christian family, she's going to change her ways, but you need to run.
Wow. Well, I'm glad she got caught.
Yes. I'm glad that whether it was truly the brother-in-law or this random person or whomever, I'm glad that they called and told police.
Yeah.
You know, who Frank was, and they could figure this out.
And I feel bad for Frank. Not that he's not culpable in this, because he is, but I feel like a lot of people who do have intellectual disabilities get taken advantage of by manipulative people.
Yep.
And, you know, it's just like, oh, how he didn't even know how many shots he fired. And
yeah. I feel like Donna right now, because I am so caught up in the weather. It was like 13 or 16.
I thought you meant the weather, and I was like, was it really hot that day? Like, I thought you meant that.
No, I'm just like, is it really, was he shot 13 or 16 times? Like, I don't know why. I'm like, I must know, because again, some stuff said 16, some stuff said 13. And I'm like, I want to know. And again, it's so insignificant to the story, because the fact of the matter is he was shot, and, you know, it's just like, I don't know. It's awful. But I'm also like,
no, I get that. You know, I get that. But man, I have not heard that story.
It just makes me sad. Like, everything he overcome from where he grew up and went into the military, which I feel like even for some people that grow up in areas like Pritchard, they feel like that's their only option out, which is super unfortunate. But he made the best of it and did the best that he could and, like, survived all these things and then fucking died because of nothing.
Right. Because she was having an affair and wanted his money, like she did in high school.
Yep.
And didn't care what to do, like, what she had to do to get it.
Exactly.
Ugh. Well, I hope she doesn't get out. After,
like, I know she probably won't in Alabama. Well, y'all let us know what y'all think about these stories. Thank y'all so much for listening and supporting us. Don't forget to like, subscribe, review all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.